Now, this is, I put a tag on the door, I don't know if you said it, but this is a low-impact pre-drying group. By which I mean, if you're here, you don't have to write. That's the only, if you write, you don't have to share. So, nothing could be less threatening than that. I hope. Now, I'll go around with these. You're getting a hint, though, by my passing out materials that I'm...
He wants us to do something.
...hoping that we're going to write, as I'm sure that some notes get taken or something. And, yeah, my name is G. Barnes, and I'm the, I serve the village's program director. In the summertime, that's working with the teaching program, the formal teaching program. Although, since I've just been at this about 10 weeks or so, and we'll be on through June and beyond, you know, I didn't have much to do with setting up the teaching faculty, but I'm part of it a couple of times here. And last week and this. And were any of you here last? I don't recognize anybody from the class last week, so I can't. It's no matter if I repeat myself in any way. And so, there's a spot up here, and you can always draw more chairs in. And this is a satellite group that requires a table, they say.
It's a table because it hits the wrist or
whatever. Yeah, it's a carpal tunnel syndrome group. So.
That's right.
So, at Holden Village, how many of you have been here before? A couple, okay, good. Well, at Holden Village, the sessions are to be designed by the instructor as self-standing, and yet they do link. And so that way, if you come today, but you don't come on Thursday, but you come again on Friday, you don't feel left out, et cetera, et cetera. If you come all three times, they are sort of loosely linked together. Mainly by me, I guess. just the posture I have as a writer. And now last week we had some real successes. We had smaller groups than this, generally around seven or so people. And so I'm happy to see this swelling numbers here. That's terrific. And then I'll mention for those of you who came in late, it's low impact. You don't have to write. If you do write, you don't have to share. And if you want to write, here's some stuff that you can. Well, you can just take one of these anyway, and then. And if you decide that you want to write, you may. And if you don't want to write, you have to. And, how are you doing back there, Megan? Do you need one?
Yes.
Well, you get a little one. I'm sorry, but you're little, so that's how it goes.
Thank you. And some more.
Good. Oh, some more. Good. Okay, you three all get a piece of paper apiece. Tear the pads in half and pass them around. We'll make a lot of, we'll feed a lot of people out of these three little fishes and loaves of bread. Here.
Oh, good job.
Can I have writing
instruments? No way that I can get out of this.
Yeah, there is. Just don't do it.
Great. Thanks.
So what we'll do in these sessions in general, it's always hard for me to write a title for these sessions, but everywhere I meet something like this, they want one. And so it makes me try to come up with something snappy, but you know, almost I feel sometimes that the titles in a given week could be interchangeable. But today is kind of trying to talk about the early steps, in my view, of let me see, pause, rewind, let me say this in a different way. My posture is on it that that there are some stages that one goes through in writing. And so if you've already been writing for quite a long time, et cetera, then that's fine. And if it works for you, great. But I'm going to kind of go through some of those early steps that I've watched unlock a lot of different people in different workshop sessions around. Have any of you been to writing workshops before? Etc. Okay, a few, and this really is low impact. You don't. I'm saying this a third time for those people who came in, but you don't have to write if you don't want to. If you do, you don't have to show it to us or tell it to us. You know, you can participate at the level that you feel happy with, and because it's not to put anybody on the spot, and it is especially with today's doc title freeing up to write for real. If one is busy thinking about whether or not the other people in the room will approve of what one is going to have to read in 20 minutes or something, then one may not write the most real stuff. You know? Because we all have a projection that we put out there for people to see, and then behind that is a lot of other stuff that, you know, we just assume keep to ourselves. Thank you, it's our private life, and so on. It's every right to be. So we'll do some exercises. We'll do some writing. Hopefully generate enough writing today that you can take some away to work on during the ensuing days if you decide to come back on one of my sessions, Thursday and Friday, I think. Mm-hmm. One of them's in here at one time of day, and one of them's in the next room at a different time of day, and they do that so that everybody stays confused all the time. No, it's to give everybody a chance to be in different rooms and be opposite different to teachers and so on. So just keep your eye on the bouncing ball on the schedule.
On Thursday, you're in the fireside at 3:45, and on Friday, you're here again at 2:00.
Oh, it says it over here. Okay, good. I'm not used to that being up there. So, and then we'll also kind of mention some things just about the state of contemporary writing, and particularly about the state of contemporary poetry. In writing workshops, I don't really work with the notion that we're going to start out to build a poem. Because, why is that? It's because in my own writing, when I start the activity, I'm not intending to write a poem. I'm just writing. And then later, something about it sort of leads me in the direction that it will become a piece of poetry, or it says it's going to be something else. And we'll go into that more later. And come right in, feel welcome. There are pencils, and people are tearing up pads and handing them around. And
I went in the wrong room.
Are you in the wrong room?
I was in the wrong
room. Oh, you were? Oh, okay.
Yes, I'll
just.
Sorry.
Is that okay? Oh, that's right. I'll put these out here so somebody doesn't write. So I'll just kind of do some work like that with you, and then, as I say, today will be self-contained, but it'll also kind of link onto the other days. And I think what I'll do, first of all, rather than fill up the space with my words, will be to read you some good words by somebody else, just as a way to kind of get us in the appetite for good words, you know. One of the ways to become a fine poet or a fine writer is to read fine writing. It just makes sense. And I recommend that our reading be rather anthropological or archaeological. That's what I want to say. In school, I know we were taught, we started out with Betty Wolfe and we came forward. You know, sort of always ask the question, you know, what did that lead to and what did that lead to? Eventually we got to William Shakespeare, and what did that lead to? Browning sisters, so on and so on. Well, I recommend starting with the most recent stuff you can lay your hands on. And if I don't get around to mentioning where you can lay your hands on it, let me know, because it's not often known. And then after you've read some very recent stuff, read some slightly less recent, some slightly read, and you get back. So you're always asking the question, where did this come from? Who influenced that poet? You know, so on. So that we get to know the generation writing now, and then the one previously, and then we get back to poets who are slightly dead, and then a little more dead, and then are really dead, and then ancient Chinese poets who are 3,000 years dead. So that's kind of the direction I generally go now. I wonder where my reading spectacles are. Well, it's really so nice that you'd all chosen this over something else. You've got a lot of choices here, so I'm glad you chose to be with one another here. This is a contemporary poet, Robert Dana, and I'm going to read the title of the poem. This is a book published a few years ago, starting out with The Difficult World. I would guess it's about 1986 or 7. Let's look. It's not worth the time here, but no. 1987. And so we'll just hear this and let it happen to us, and we won't try to do one like this on the fly or anything. We'll just hear it in a gentle way. Welcome. Robert Dana is certainly a well-known poet in many circles. He's not. There was a time when we had one poet in the country that was Robert Frost, and everybody knew that, and so on and so on. There were a lot of sort of po-biz reasons that was the case. Now you've got many, many good operating. There are more poets operating now in America than ever before. And that's not a bad thing. That's good. And a lot of them are very accomplished and very astute, very sensitive, and can teach us quite a lot. So this is starting out for the difficult world. This morning, once again, I see young girls with their books and clarinets starting out for the difficult world. The wind has turned into the manure. It picks a few leaves from the trees, leaves already curled, some brown. They scatter. Even so, their circles under maple and hackberry thicken. The light, clean as juice to the taste. Great art, someone said, rides on the backs of the poor. Perhaps that's so, but this is not Long Island. No packed white waves leap yelping on the shore. Here the nights are cold and starry. Three solitary clouds pig along the near horizon. And you could mistake this autumn for Keats's, or your own, or the autumn of someone you once knew. That was kind of a wistful piece. This is the first time I've ever encountered the word pig as a verb before. It's a very intentional use of the language. Three solitary clouds pig along the near horizon.
The image.
Strong image there.
I'm not sure I get it.
Yeah, I think they're shaped like pigs. I think they're taking their time and they're muffling along. If they were making sounds, I don't know. Typically, don't we think of, there's certain kind of standard word clumps in poems that we're used to. The trees rustle, the clouds float or sail, those kinds of things. And here these clouds aren't floating. For some reason, to this poet's eye, they were pigging along, bumping along. This takes place in Iowa, by the way. Having been to Iowa, I think the clouds could well pig along there. And then one other here to kind of start us off. This is a Pulitzer Prize winning American woman poet. And I read this one, Megan, you were here last, whenever it was I was last here, and so you've heard this one already, but gosh, it's so good, I'm just going to go ahead and read it again. This is Mary Oliver, and woman who writes with such connection to the natural world. Rain in Ohio. The robin cries, rain. The crow calls, plunder. The black snake, climbing in the vines, halts his long ladder of muscle while the thunderheads whirl up out of the white west, their dark hooves nicking the tall trees as they come. Rain, 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 sings the robin, frantically, and flies for cover. The crow hunches. The black snake pours himself swift and heavy into the ground. One of the earmarks of lots of good writing, and certainly of poetry, it's an earmark, is kind of compressed nature of it, a condensed way of talking about it. And when we see at first the black snake climbing in the vines and he halts his long ladder of muscle, that gives us a lot of information with just about five words. Then a little bit later, the thunderheads whirl up. We have one sort of association with that word, the thunderheads whirling up. And then we learn that it's going to be a metaphor for horses. Their dark hooves nicking the tall trees as they come. So there's a lovely twist on that word whirl. And then this black snake finally, in this gorgeous economy of language, pours himself swift and heavy into the ground. He's just a liquid thing. If you've watched snakes move in nature, they're absolutely perfect. How would you improve a snake? So those are two kind of good word pieces to start us out with. Now, my own thought about writing is, and the way that I tend to be a practitioner of it, is that I feel that it's important to warm up, just like athletes do, and then write. And these are quite discreet. You warm up, and you finish warming up, that's closed, and then you write, and then you fix up. The worst thing you can do is try to fix up before you write or as you write, by which I mean self-editing. Okay? So we'll practice a device that's called by a lot of different names, but I call it the one free writing. And that's why you don't have to read anything out loud and so on. Is because during that writing time, some of our best stuff cannot get out of us. We're calling this section freeing up to write for real. If we're going to write about our real concerns, our true hearts, you know, all that stuff. See, sometimes we don't even know what some of our real concerns are. I believe, and a lot of people show that to me. You know, we think we're concerned about one batch of stuff, but actually there's this bass note going on down here that's something else. It's the kids or, you know, whatever is going on. And so in order to get that stuff to come out, it's necessary to be quite free during that time. Well, if you're thinking about, will they get it? Will a reader get this? Will a hearer get it? Will they accept it? Will they think I'm stupid? Will they think I express this profoundly or poorly? Then we're chonking down on the, you know, on the writing part. That's later. Think about the life of a poem in publication. A writer's got to write it, and it goes away, and then an editor edits it. The editor has nothing to do with the process of writing. So that's an important distinction to make. How do we warm up? Well, I think it's going to be up to you. I mean, there are books on these things, and people ask about them all the time, and I don't commend or deny any of them in particular. Ed was mentioning earlier, reminding me of a good old standard by William Stafford called Writing the Australian Crawl, and that's certainly a fine book. He wrote a second book of prose on the nature of writing called You Must Revise Your Life, which is a fairly strong statement from such a modest man among us. And but there are books, you know, and there are books and exercises. I tend to just make up my own. You know, pianists have exercises they do, athletes have exercises, so writers have exercises they do. So, just as some warm-up stuff, I'm given to understand that the electrical chemical charges of your brain go at about 180 miles a second when you're operating at kind of full-tilt boogie, which is amazingly fast. So let's try to get up from maybe where we're working out about 85,000 words a second, you know, miles a second, clear up to 180. We'll do some timed stuff, some kind of guided warm-up stuff, just some samples, and then if you come to all the sessions, you'll maybe hear enough different samples that you'll find some of the favorites and will make you think of others that you want to invent for your own. This is a very participatory sport, so, you know, I didn't write a book on this, and I don't intend ever to, I hope to God I don't ever fall to the temptation of writing a book on this stuff, because I think it happens right now, like this. Okay, so one, you know, really quick one that I often use. This is not fake, or I'm not trying to be a flim-flam man or anything. This is what I use. I just have a list of favorite words. Some of them are actually listed down. Some are in my head. People who, you wouldn't be in here if you didn't have words going in your head in a little different way than a lot of other people. You rethink things that people have said to you. You rethink conversations that you've had. You sort of plan the best way to say something to someone so that you can get your point across, but they won't be heard. All that kind of stuff. You know, you're not brusque or louts. Brusque people or loutish people with words. So everybody in that camp just has favorite words for whatever reasons. And so let's just take, we'll do 1 minute for this first warm-up. And you can write this. I would say you probably won't find yourself writing very many. You could, but not probably very many complete sentences. Sentence fragments, sometimes it turns into a list, leaps of association, it can be anything. But try to get, we're writing by the pound, so try to get as much down as you can in the time allowed. And I actually will time you and stop you at 60 seconds. I don't know if you had a point of clarification.
No, just
where they get that phrase, try to work the bugs out. Now, I want to mention to you that I have two different pairs of spectacles. This one's for long distance, this one's for reading. I also have some bifocals, but obviously those did not agree with me. From time to time, I may stand up or I may look in your general direction. If I'm wearing this tortoise-looking plastic shell piece, I cannot, or if I'm wearing nothing, I cannot see what you have on your page. And we could have somebody attest to that here. You can just,
Oh boy.
Yeah, see, the whole room just tilted, so, you know. But what I'm looking for is to see how much you're writing, okay? Because I want to encourage, if you've just got three words, then I'm doing something wrong, okay? We're writing by the pound. All right, so I'll pick a favorite word of mine, and I'll try to ride along with you if I can find any paper left. And
right in the front.
On the floor. Well, see, I don't have any glasses on, so I can't.
The pens are next to it.
The pens are next to it.
6 o'clock.
Which end is it? Okay. Sometimes it's good to have a handicap because I have a choice about which way I want to see, realistically or impressionistically. This is a word that's a common word. It's not a $10 word by any means. For some reason, it's significant to me, and so I get to choose. And let's let the word be piano. Go. I have a piano in a schoolhouse, Sunday school rooms, tent revival, movers, which is short for piano movers. I mean, you think of the big wheels that you got on pianos that need to be moved around a lot. Elton John's piano specifications, which I saw in piano in a field, which I saw in Dime, ragtime, piano man with a question mark, because I can't remember who wrote the song, but, and then piano my teacher playing the piano, all that kind of stuff. Okay, so does anybody else want to read out their list? This is a matter of public curiosity and helpfulness. Thank you.
I'll take a stab. Recitals, sweaty palms, knot in the stomach, 9 p.m. Seems like every recital that thing blew right in the middle of the recital. Grand, beautiful, shiny black.
Great. Thank you. Someone else?
Yeah.
Great.
White and black, offset, open, fluid, tuneful, with strings like tethers across the miles of black backbone, waiting, needing help, not being played, helpless, needing connections with white or black or yellow hands.
There you go. Thank you. Someone else? Please.
Piano man. Top, skip the keys, alternating black and white, no grave, tall, out of tune, tinkling.
Pleasure?
See what?
You play with the piano?
No.
No, you don't. Pleasurable to listen to.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else, please?
Piano, living room, notes, rhythm, community, singing, fingers moving, long, dancing, humming, lively, slow, sad, glad, uplifting.
Bingo. You see, some of these could be poems as they are. Mm-hmm. Given a title, they just already are. Why is that?
Because you get the image.
Mm-hmm. Right. We got strong images. Now, let's stretch Ed's word out a little bit and make sure we're clear on this. Images are not only visual, are they? Was it you had sweaty, mm-hmm. sweaty mm-hmm. hands or something? Yeah, see?
Helpless.
So, and I, you know, so we want to think of all the five senses, okay, as possibilities for image, taste, smell, touch, and that one is very, very important, but we don't often identify what it is. If it says scratchy, hard, soft, hot, cold, you know, sweaty in a certain way, so on, that's all tactile, you know, sense of touch stuff. What are they about? Seeing and hearing, I guess. They say that about 90% of what we get as information comes by seeing, but it doesn't have to be that way. And one of the ways to have a fuller world is to do something in the arts that causes us to look more closely, listen more closely, observe more closely, work with clay, that's tactile, you know, work with weaving and so on, so that the world can come into us as fully as possible.
We feel.
Exactly, yeah, feel it. And because I've worked a lot with people of college age, prep school age, and so on, but also with a lot of adults, and it strikes me that our culture, I've got another piano, somebody. Our culture is one in which we're all too easily ready to say about ourselves, and I think this is a terrible thing, this, you know, confession. I mean, if we really stop to think about this, I think we would just wither and never say it. Saying, it's all boring, you know. The movie, my life, all of life, the mall, you know,
et cetera, et cetera.
It's about, yeah, you know, and you know, I find the world many things, but I do not find it boring. And if it is boring to me, then what that means is not that the condition of the world is not appropriate. It means that I'm not on the ball, you know. I need to wake up, smell the coffee, slap my face, do something, do a few, you know, stand on my head, go for a walk, go for a run, see how well I do at that. And that's not very good anymore. You know, so to engage the world more fully. So one of the real reasons for trying to achieve art writing, which is what a creative writing class is doing, is expressive writing, is to have the world in as full a way as we can. There are loads of things going on all the time. I think it's a God-given writer, maybe it's in the Declaration of Independence or somewhere, it says that anybody can say about something, I'm bored. I think that's a construction I can live with. You know, to that person I silently say, oh, I'm very sorry for you, you know. But to say, it's boring, the teacher's boring, English is boring, the class is boring, by the way, Mr. Barnes, you're boring, you know. Well, the person next to that person thinks I'm quite exciting, thank you, you know, it's a personal opinion. And then also we ask questions, so we'll get that kind of answer. You know, how was the movie? Boring. Oh, okay, well, guess I won't go. But if we say, if we construct a question as, what did you think of the movie? Well, I don't know, I thought it was kind of boring. Well, then we still would go, you know, because it's just that person owning that answer. So the world is a rich, lively place. Those are the five kind of physical senses we have. William Blake said that the imagination is also a sense. And that's what much of his writing and graphic art was about, was the use of the imagination as a sense. And that's pretty interesting to think that way for a while. Another juncture that kind of is right smushed in there with all those is logical critical thinking. And I'll give you a little tip here that you may not have heard of. But in learning laboratories, they've been cooking over this stuff, and the human activity that encourages logical critical thinking most is that of expressive writing. In other words, if you want to be able to write a good essay or letter to the editor, do expressive writing. Or if you're a teacher, don't just pile on more term papers, but have people do expressive writing, they'll write better term papers, more logical term papers. We now know that comes from a particular part of the brain. Logical critical thinking is made in one part of the brain, and it gets art, and we don't really understand exactly why some of these things help that, but it does. So if you find yourself being confused, as I often do in myself, to do something expressive will help me get unconfused. So those are a couple of reasons to do some kind of expressive art, writing or painting or something, is to have the world in as full and rich a way as it really is, or more, and also to get clear, get less confused. We are not the experts. There's a Japanese beetle that there are 10 million colors discernible to the human eye. I don't know how they figure that stuff out. But there's a Japanese beetle, and when you and I look at something and say, that's red, the Japanese beetle sees it as 12 different colors. This assists the Japanese beetle in not becoming bird lunch. Okay. And so, are those colors really out there? Yes. Is the Japanese beetle making them up? No. You know, he hasn't the wit for it. You know. You know, coyotes smell things that you and I have no idea, you know. You waltz a coyote through, for example, we may think this room does not smell at all, and you waltz a coyote through here, oh yeah, this person was mowing the lawn this morning, fresh cut grass clippings, or this person had a bath this morning, or this person didn't, this person's wearing brand new shoes, this person just took a hike in the, yeah, there's a tennis shirt is, you know, needing a shower, and, you know, whatever. And all these, you know, may have 100 clues. So when you spread it out over the animal kingdom, I mean, we're kind of down the middle kind of in the animal kingdom. We get a pretty good amount of pretty much everything, but that's not all of creation. And you can tune up for that by having an expressive form. I'm here to say that I think everybody probably has at least one and probably two and maybe more art forms that they ought to practice lifelong for their own good. Much as now they talk about lifelong sports. Yeah. When I was in seventh grade, we used to play something in gymnasium class called scooter ball, which meant you were on a little thing about this square with rounded corners that had four piano wheels on it. You parked your hiney on it and scooted around by means of your hands and feet and tried to keep people from hitting with a dodgeball. Now that is not a lifelong, you know, physical activity. I have no interest in this any longer, nor can I find buddies to play it with, you know. But yeah, so there are lifelong sports and there are lifelong arts. Let's do another warm-up.
Question before you
sure.
Is what you're talking about technological thinking the reason why engineers like myself and stuff use synecdoches and brainstorming sessions?
Yes, exactly.
And word association to try to bring out the creativity?
Precisely. Yeah, precisely. We're not just confined to creativity that might show up in a book of poems or a gallery or whatever, but, you know, we understand that creativity is in the realm of problem solving, in the realm of trying to mount a particular campaign or, you know, speak technically about, you know, so on. What is it? It's not divorced. You know, the technical writing and the technical and engineering and so on are not divorced from creativity, they are creativity. Yeah, so that's what all those brainstorming sessions are about. And that's, if you notice, in a true brainstorming session, I mean, a lot of people throw that word around like they know what it means, but in a true one, if you're experienced one, you accept everything. Mm-hmm. You know? You don't say, oh, well, I'm sorry, Dorothy, that's just kind of a kooky idea. I'm going to put that on the board. You know? Accept everything. Well, that's the same thing we're doing here. We accept everything. Put anything you want on the page. You know, it doesn't have to go on the board. It doesn't have to be accepted. Okay, so words is one way to do it. If we had time, we'd do a couple more of those, and maybe later in the week we will. But for now, let's just skip that kind. Write about the same amount of information, about the same amount of poundage or paper space there, but you only get 45 seconds. And in this one, we're going to try to plug in the sensory, but we're just going to use the ears. Jot down every single thing you hear in the next 45 seconds, and I mean everything. And when you think you've heard everything, keep listening. Listen one more notch deeper and one more notch, okay? And I'm going to put my watch.
Put the other glasses.
Okay, stop. I went to broadcasting school and had that buzzer surgically implanted in my throat, so I hope you appreciate the pain and unpleasantness and expense I went through. Alrighty. Well, don't start with me this time. Who wants to do a list?
What'd I have a question for you.
Sure.
I was inhibited in this one, and I think the reason was I was trying to describe it.
Hell yeah.
I had a real hard time kind of coming up with a list to describe it, but I'll go ahead and share it.
Okay. Give it a shot.
Hands sliding, pens writing, creek running, person shouting, chair creaking, pens clicking, trees rustling, chair again, breathing, paper crinkling, all paper crinkling, coffee mug, Jesus voice.
Thank you. Anyone else?
It's just about the same.
About the same batch.
About the same. Yeah.
Anybody got one on your page that you haven't heard?
My stomach.
Your stomach?
I didn't hear that.
I heard that, but I didn't write it down.
Crack of bones.
So what?
Crack of bones.
Crack of bones, okay.
Yeah.
And footsteps? I didn't hear footsteps, but that's great.
Whine of a mosquito.
Oh, yeah.
I heard mumbling. I couldn't tell what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I have, is a mumbling kind of thing here.
Children
too.
Children,
yeah. Did you hear radio, or was I wrong about that?
No, you heard that.
Did I hear something like music, but I'm not? It's too far away or too muffled. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
I put down melt in silence.
Yeah, those little holes where there's just sometimes.
Breathing.
Breathing.
Sighing.
Ticking of what?
Uh-huh. I had different kinds of paper. I had a rippling paper and another one that was flipping page. Mm-hmm. Then I had just plain paper up the top. Then I had a pen on pad. Then I thought I heard a hand brushing off eraser bits, but I'm not sure about that. Is anybody using a pencil? Go and whack your knuckles with a ruler, because in this kind of writing, no time to erase, just scratch through and keep going. You know? But you hear that? Telltale, you know, I didn't say it right. The instruction quality was poor. Okay, so that's some stuff. Just kind of how to get up to have it, you know, flex. Now, I'd like you to take just no more than 30 seconds. Don't wallop anybody when you do this. When you stand up, take a couple of deep breaths or toe tappers or whatever. And I'll tell you why in a minute, but just kind of stretch a bit. Be very aware of your breath. Fill up your lungs and get it out. Okay, and move the shoulders around a touch, whatever it takes to kind of, you know, feel comfortable again, because we've been sitting for what I think of as too long. Oh, wow, I hear a lot of cracky things in my own neck. Set all
around.
You
should do the listening exercise
during. Yeah, right. Several deep breaths and then sit down. Oh, thanks. This is an illustration of Lung Man, and I do have this copyright, so don't go try peddling this. No, I don't. This is Lung Man, and I want to illustrate several different things if I can recall them all during this, now that I've got them up there. But your brain is an organ of the body that is really, let's make sure we distinguish between a brain and a mind. A brain is a machine that, you know, is an organ of the body. A mind is a brain that we're trying to turn into a thinking machine. Okay. And the brain itself, just the organ, requires a great amount of oxygen flow. And so, because we're doing something sedentary, remember to breathe. You know, scouts in here? Any former scouts? What three things do you need to start a fire, scouts?
That count, girls?
Of course,
any
it counts.
Air, fuel, any kind of scouts.
Oxygen, fuel.
Oxygen, fuel.
And
heat. Heat. Yeah. Fuel, oxygen, and heat. Well, in order to get some fires going up in here, we need a lot of oxygen. And then we'll assume that the fuel is, comes from, within. And then the heat is trying to, you know, is that warm-up exercise. That's why it's called a warm-up exercise, to try to get up to speed so we're excited, you know. And so Lung Man needs a lot of air in and so on. Then I'll mention that there's an interesting thing that goes on here. I wonder if this one works any better. There's problems with the marker there, Jeff. No big deal. Those of you who came in late don't know I'm talking to the Tape Ministry studio guys. A lot of times we think that expressive writing and, in particular, stuff toward the poetic end of the scale starts with our mind. And actually, Allen Ginsberg talks about, so that means he probably stole it from somebody who knew what they were talking about, like the Hindus or something, that it really starts in our mouth in a very real way. One of the things that I mean by this, or that I interpret this to mean, that I mean by quoting it to you, is that I think that in my best writing that I don't start with ideas. I'm going to write a poem about the Persian Gulf War. I'm going to write a poem about why I don't like my pastor's sermons. I'm going to write a poem about my love for my son and daughter. What happens to me is that I hear about five or seven words run through my mind that intrigue me by their sound, by their associations, by their what we would call meanings, etc. And that starts me going. A case can be made for this. It starts in the mouth. So in other words, expressive writing, I'm going to have to get some new pens. Expressive writing for me starts with words. Poems are built out of words. And I think ideas have a place, but I guess I think that the poet or writer over here writes words, and and for as long as possible tries not to have ideas about the word so it doesn't get pretentious. And in the reader or hearer, that's their realm, is to have ideas. Okay? And that if I'm trying to start with ideas, I usually write stilted stuff. And if I'm writing to a cause, say, why? Because art's risky. You know, this kind of stuff where we're trying to get into, you know, writing for real and figure out who we really are at this moment, it's risky. And the reason that it's risky is we don't know what will happen. You know, it's like painting and having the rough idea that you know, it's going to have some trees and a lake and so on in it, but we're not really sure. All of a sudden some sunlight might come in over here and these trees might need to change shades by 27 colors of green, you know. And we find that out only in the doing of it. And the same is true of writing. The same is true of all arts and expressing. Well, anyway, so what this finally comes down to in terms of it starts in the mouth, just to think biologically for a second, at birth, mammals, the most sensitive parts of their entire bodies, babies have a huge brain and a huge belly. You know, and if you look at a baby, its arms are so little because it didn't eat them, that it can't even reach up to the top of its head like a hand. Okay, they have little bitty arms, little legs, because they're all crunched up in there. You know, but they need a big brain and a big belly. And one reason is because they're learning a lot of stuff while they're still fetuses. We know that we can play music for them after about 5 to 7 months or something, and then play that same music, and they'll recognize it later, and other music, and they won't. So we know they can hear through there. They can see after about 7 or 8 months. If mom lifts her blouse a little bit and you know, faces the sun, they can see a golden glow on that wall of the, you know, might turn around and face it like a little geranium in there, so on. Well, just thinking biologically, the thing that's most sensitive in mammals is the very front part of the mouth. And that's so that we can nurse. And that's true of raccoons and persians and flipper. And that's where most of the nerve, that's where the nerve endings are most fully well developed. They're almost like an adult nerve endings. And so we notice that in so many cultures, what we call the, and that's called a rooting mechanism. If you touch any mammal here, it'll go in that direction, seeking a nipple. That's why my Uncle Joseph, who never had children, and it's a good thing, was really wrong to go like this, because it just confuses a baby a lot, you know. Which side to go to? Well, listen to that. Rooting mechanism. Well, the root words, there is no stuff that's not connected if you look around. The root words of so many languages, in other words, the words that a baby needs first come from here. Mama, papa, baby, milk, all up here. Mudder, mudder, mummy. And words that happen back here, there aren't even nerve endings yet to start forming the tongue to do this. Good, you know. So it blends, you know, consonant blends, all those kinds of things. And so the poetry of the home, let us say, the poetry of roots or the nest, you know, if you want a piece of poetry or a piece of expressive writing of any sort that you're doing to have more of that warmth and that closeness and that, you know, of family and of that innocence, let me say, then we'll choose words that have a lot of M's and P's and B's, etc. And if we want something to have more mechanical, you know, less organic sounds in it, we'll very deliberately choose synonymous words with the words that we've originally written down that have K's and G's and J's and L's and L, or. And, you know, it's a very, very hard sound to make. No wonder we don't call our mamas llamas, you know. It'd be too hard for young babies. So that's some physiological stuff about the writing itself. Now, let's do a chunk of actual writing. Before we tear out of here, and if anybody wants to stay around for a little bit afterward, I'll be here. And then if you want to come back, great. If you don't want to come back ever again, I won't take it personally. Yes, I will. It'll break my heart. No, I won't. So let's think of a piece of writing in this way. Let's do a silly one and then one that's less silly. And we'll just do about 2 minutes on each one. I wish I had a lot more time for this. On this first one, jot down the phrase, there somewhere, please. I cannot write today because. I cannot write today because. Jot down the ends of that sentence, both serious and actual and imagined. And I mean, you've said to yourself many times, I should write a letter to so-and-so. I want to write this piece of expressive writing. I want to make it, you know, but I can't because, you know, no, I have to do it tomorrow because today, you know. So jot down all the endings of that sentence that you can. I cannot write today because what?
Silly.
Anything from I broke my wrist to I've got nothing but Gershwin on my mind. Mm-hmm. It'll kind of help us out if we do, but if we don't, that's fine. We'll go on to the next thing. I wish there is one.
I'll do the one with the name without saying it.
Okay. Put in a different name.
Okay. Paula can't write today because she's unsure of who she is and she thinks she has nothing worthwhile inside of her.
Okay. Very well imagined. Please. Thanks, Mom.
Lee cannot write today because the shame covers him like a blanket.
Bingo. Okay. So we're actually getting a metaphorical piece there. Nice. Something else?
I can't write today because the cat is looking away.
There, see? That's both serious and real. I just was the proud owner of 3 cats, and I know that that's absolutely true. I can't write because the cat's looking away. I have here Aunt Ida cannot write today because she's dead. I don't mean any disrespect, but she is. That's a fact of the matter. All right, so that's one way of thinking. And you could take any one of those and expand upon it. Okay, and you could do that between now and Thursday, and you can come back with something pretty snappy if you wanted to. Remember, images, a bunch. Metaphors, when possible, like this one. Shame covers her like a blanket. So, Kim Stafford once asked his father, William Stafford, he was having a little trouble with a poem, and he wanted to say something about these gravestones that he saw out on a walk in the countryside that reminded him of sheep in the evening light. And he said, how can I just really squish that down, Dad, and said it pretty quickly. And his dad, without thinking, said, oh, say the tombstones grazed on the hill where I walked. And so then you can see the white tombstones, and they are sheep, and they're just kind of huddled down there grazing. They're shaped kind of like sheep. They look kind of like sheep and all that stuff. So images and metaphors, go for those. And then this is one that we assigned kind of last week, but it's a really good one. This is Rich Fodder, and I use it all the time myself. Jot down the phrase, I remember, and I'm going to say a few things to you, and I'm going to have you write for about 2 minutes if you can bear to, and then we can get out of here, because I know you probably have supper. You have designs on food, I understand that, so I remember. Now, on this one, write as fast as you possibly can. Ideally, it will be darn near illegible. Okay? You're really writing by the pound. Push it. Don't try to interrupt yourself. If you can remember something from when you were 4, fine. If the next thing is from when you're 19, fine. If you get stalled and there's nothing coming from, you know, that time or some profound, 16, oh, wow, it was a great year, it was a terrible year, oh, I couldn't drive his license, but I couldn't, you know, get a date, whatever, then remember breakfast. Okay? But just keep remembering. And generate as many of those as you can. Hopefully, in a couple of minutes, you might, and you don't have to put, I remember every time, but just jot down enough stuff so that you'll know later what it is. Nobody has to be able to read this but you, so make it only that legible. No Palmer Method gold stars for this, okay? Now, do you understand what's suggested here? Okay, just write down as many quick memories as you can, and ready, go. That's before you eat. Alrighty, would you circle one or two of them that seem promising? I'm not going to try to describe that very much, but just circle one or two of those that seem to you to be promising. You won't have to read it or anything, but right now, while it's still fresh, you have a certain set of things in you that tells you that it's promising.
Oh,
And that, right next to that one, would you jot down a couple of sensory details about that? The color of something, the sound of something, the smell of something, the texture or the heat of the day or the cold of the night. Or... And then from I count right today to you and to he, she, and to the person, etc. One of the functions of that is to get what's called emotional distancing from something. And sometimes that's a freeing device when we suddenly... It's a danger to read a poem that is in the I language as though that is talking exactly about the poet. We had a problem with that in a different kind of setting a couple of weeks ago where somebody was writing and something kind of seemed to somebody else to be referring to suicide. And the person writing it had to explain that, first of all, she wasn't talking about suicide, and secondly, they shouldn't be concerned for her, thank you. You know, I is one way of writing, but it's a that is a speaker, okay? That is not necessarily the poet. Sometimes the speaker and the poet are pretty close, sometimes they're quite distant. But to get some real distance, and sometimes to unlock yourself a bit more, free yourself up a bit more, to write for real, you can put it in second person, or in third person, or give them some name that is not yours, or give them a name that's in the opposite gender of yourself. Now, between now and Thursday, if you want to do some fix-up, by which I mean expanding, by which I mean taking one of these I remembers and kind of using some of those ideas, it can come back to us in any form, or you don't have to bring it back to us, or you don't even have to come back, remember that. But the deal is that try to actually have that memory in as full a way as you can, or if you're using the I cannot write today, because try to, you know, flesh that out a bit. It might be a paragraph, it might be a poem, it might be in the form of a piece of a letter that you would write to someone explaining something, a memory, or why Kevin can't write today, or whatever. So you can see that we're real accepting in here of all manner of stuff. Hope to see you on Thursday. If you see me around between now and then and want to talk about stuff with me, that's just grand. And whether or not you ever get back here in these sessions, thank you very much for coming.
Thank
you're
you.
Nice people. You weren't hostile and you participated.